One series is over in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. One has pushed one team to the brink, while there are a bunch of others tied up at two, and who knows where they're going to go as we break down that and more on episode 132 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Welcome in. Tuesday, May the 10th. It's the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Carter Mard with you, your host. It's already almost 20 degrees outside in London, Ontario. Here in Canada, we just got... So, 2 weeks ago, we were minus 8 overnight, freezing outside, maybe only getting up to like 6, 7 degrees. Today's 23, tomorrow's 25, Thursday 27, 26, and 26. All sun. It's fantastic. And there's playoff hockey going on. I appreciate you following along at ST Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify on social media. The Hockey Writers, I'm trying to get a piece out right now talking about how the Canucks are making a mistake not extending Boudreaux past next season. I kind of break it down. Editors are weird. And maybe if you're an editor, you're listening. So I submit a piece. I hyperlink a site that I'm referring to incorrectly. Instead of the editor actually changing it, they just comment saying, hey, you did this wrong, go back and fix it. Like, isn't that the editor's job? No, I could be totally wrong here, but I don't know. Like, I've had editorial comments being like, you made spelling mistakes here and you've done things incorrectly there. Please go back and fix it. It's like, well, isn't that your job? Isn't that what an editor does? Anyways, that's my little rant there, but it should be up in the next day or so. And you can go check that one out. And then I'll have more pieces actually breaking down players and evaluating their grade based on the season on the Hockey Writers. And I have about 10 players to go through. So looks like I've got some content moving forward with the Hockey Writers, but we'll break down some of the series going on right now. I want to go in a little bit deeper on Colorado sweeping the Predators. The New York Rangers are in a bind against the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins are here to play. Abundant of 2-2 series tied, and I'll give you my quick thoughts on those ones as well. And one of those series that is in fact tied at 2, I kind of want to break down a little bit because a lot of people are talking about it, and a lot of people, it's so weird that the perspective and narrative of things dictates the vibe going on. So far, the first round matchup between Tampa Bay and Toronto has not disappointed. It's tied at 2. The two teams have split games up until this point, Toronto winning the first one, followed by Tampa Bay, then Toronto, then Tampa Bay. The difference here with the way that both teams are approaching each win and loss is wholeheartedly based on the experience factor. The Leafs have gone from the favorites to, oh, I don't know anymore, to, oh, we got this, to we're not going to win another game in this series. This was an actual... Now, mind you, a lot of people aren't stupid. You're aware of where your weaknesses are in your lineup. In Toronto, Justin Hall, defenseman who didn't play in games 1 and 2, has drawn in for games 3 and 4 so far. He's not my favorite player. There are mistakes that he makes. There are some good things that he does too, but I prefer Timothy Liljegren over him. And not only did Justin Hall play in game 4 in that game that Toronto got shellacked 7-3, but he started. And I was there. I'm like, why is Justin Hall starting? Like, what? Why wouldn't you start him over TJ Brody or Jake Muzzin or Morgan Riley? You know what I mean? And this was the Sheldon Keefe comes in, the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, to discuss the loss. One of the first questions he gets is from, you'll know this name, Steve Simmons. This was the question and response.
Why would you start your worst defenseman in a building knowing it was going to be this loud and this crazy?
Who's our worst defenseman?
Justin Hall.
It's your opinion, I guess.
It's not that he asked the question. It's how he asked it and how he worded it. He asked, Why would you start your worst defenseman in a game knowing that there's going to be the buzz and energy in the building? And Keefe's like, who's our worst defenseman? And immediately he's like, Justin Hall. He's like, that's your opinion. A lot of people have that opinion. That's not the problem. And by the way, everyone, Steve Simmons is one of the biggest clowns in media. Like there's a thread right now on Twitter about all of the times Toronto athletes and coaches and whatnot have just fired back at Steve. Austin Matthews was one of them. He was like, well, Steve, it's unfortunate that you're the one asking this question. I didn't appreciate the article you wrote about me, but, and then he went on to answer the question professionally. But this is how I would have worded the question. Sheldon Keefe, and if I'm in the media room, they point to me. Said, Sheldon, what was the decision to start Justin Hall at the beginning of the game, knowing that Tampa Bay was going to bring the energy, instead of electing to start maybe a guy like TJ Brody or Mark Giordano or Morgan Rielly, who maybe has a little bit more experience in that situation and plays a little bit heavier in your lineup? That's not written down. I came up with that question on the spot. He's all about clickbait. The moral of what I'm saying here is the perspective in Toronto is wildly different than the perspective in Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, game one, got shellacked by Toronto. 5-0. Jack Campbell had a shutout. Tampa Bay did not score in game one. Tampa afterwards, coaches, media, it's one game. It's a freebie. We didn't play well. You know, got to take the freebies, but we didn't play well. We'll come back game two. Long series. Toronto loses game four. That effort, you're never going to win. Now, understandably, Toronto has a little bit more of scar tissue than maybe Tampa Bay. Tampa has not been used to losing in 2 years. So when they have lost the game, the confidence is there knowing that they will recover. Also intact right now, still to this point, dating back to two playoffs ago, Tampa Bay is 16-0 following a loss in the playoffs. So yes, no wonder that Tampa Bay hasn't wavered. But man, Tampa didn't even think about, oh man, we could drop two straight in Toronto. A new playoffs, a new series. That 16-0 streak is not that it's nothing, but a new team and a new series, a new year, Tampa's not even thinking about that. It just so happens to be the case. They're 16-0 following a loss in the playoffs. But John Cooper isn't wavered. He's been here. He's done this. They've lost games. They've been pushed to the brink. Doesn't matter. Toronto, the sky is falling. You think Tampa loved their effort in game one? Victor Hedman losing a race to David Kampf? You think Tampa Bay was screaming at the world? Hedman's lost a step. He can't even stop friggin' David Kampf. No, Tampa, they didn't care. They knew they had a Norris candidate. They know they have stars like Stamkos and Point and Kucherov. Toronto's got to have that mindset and confidence. And for as much as I've taken some time to think about this, but after the game, they were talking about the mentality of Toronto and how are you not more pissed off that you lost a game like that? Tampa Bay didn't get pissed off after game one. So when Sheldon Keefe and the team came afterwards, they weren't pissed off. They said, you know, the mindset of coming in here was to get the split. And we got the split in Tampa. It's 2-2. We're going back to Toronto. Guys, short memory. Short memory in Toronto. That's all you've ever wanted. Don't dwell on the losses. Don't think about it. You get shellacked, fine. Was the effort up to Toronto standards? No. I got why people were pissed. But Tampa Bay wasn't pissed at. Like, Tampa Bay, after game one, was like, what was that? Shake it off. Let's go game two. And then they come back and win. Perspective changes everything. The perspective that Toronto media has is completely different from the perspective that the Toronto Maple Leafs have. The media is, they're never winning another game with that effort. Awful. And mind you, I'm a part of that. I was saying I can't understand why it took 8 minutes for them to get going in the game and they're already down 3-0. But Toronto's perspective is, the series is tied at 2. It's now a best of 3. If you end up having to play all 3 games, 2 of them are at home. That's kind of the perspective I'm trying to wrap my head around. Listen, it's a new way to think and not dwell on losses and not ridicule every single thing of every single moment that every single player does. But it's what Tampa does, and they're the reigning and back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. So maybe it's smart that Toronto is taking a page out of their book. Anyways, game 5 tonight in Toronto. I expect Toronto to come back with a lot more effort. The crowd's going to be nuts. I want to see how Tampa does after that win as well. Do they come back? Do they press even harder? This is a perfect matchup of, is Tampa going to overpower Toronto? Is Toronto going to bounce back and come back with a better effort tonight? We'll see. I'm excited to watch the game tonight. One series that is over, that is the Colorado Avalanche, Nashville Predators. Avalanche sweep the Predators. Valeri Nichushkin scoring the go-ahead goal here with 7:58 left on the clock.
It's over. Wanted to work it through Trenton and does. McCarr to the circle. Cross-eye shot. Score! Val Nichushkin puts the Avs back on top. 4-3. Cale McCarr drew all eyes.
And because of that, they are the first team to advance to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So Colorado is now on to the Western Conference semifinals for the fourth consecutive season and second consecutive after a sweep. They are 6-0 since the franchise relocated to Denver in a best of 7 series after winning the first 3 games with their fourth sweep in that span. So of the 6 series they've had since the relocation, 4 of them have ended in a sweep after they win 3 games. That's absolutely insane. After they win the first 3 games. A couple of them, they've lost the next game, but they're 6-0 in that span. Obviously, it's very tough to come back from 0-3 down. But nevertheless, they are now awaiting the winner of St. Louis, Minnesota. So St. Louis, Minnesota knows exactly who they're going to play, whatever team moves on. They will be playing the Colorado Avalanche. Colorado dominated this series. Colorado outscored Nashville 21-9 in the 4 games. And it was just, the X factor for me was Nashville not having UC Saros. UC Saros this season was their X factor. I know that Roman Josi has a really good opportunity to win the Norris. And Nashville has 2 X factors. And yes, you can make the argument that you want to put Philip Forsberg in there and Matt Duchene. That's fine. But in the playoffs, you need goaltending. And it's not a shot at Connor Ingram or David Rittich. They're not the guys. They are not the guys that rode all year with this team. They are not the guys that started, as I checked the stats for UC Saros. He played, I think, like 60, 70 games or something like that for them. He was the absolute workhorse of this team. There are very few workhorses in the National Hockey League now in terms of goaltenders. UC Saros is one. He started 67 games for this team. Dave Rittich only started 12, played in 17, but UC Saros started in 67 games, was 38-25-7 with a 2.64 goals against and a .918 save percentage. The other two goaltenders and their stats in the regular season, Dave Rittich, 357 goals against, 889 save percentage. Connor Ingram, 371 goals against, 879 save percentage. That is a significant difference and jump from one goaltender to then the next two. It's nothing against Ingram and Rittich. I'm not saying that Nashville was going to win the series. I think I said if Saros came back, they might win a game or so, but don't be surprised if it's a sweep. Well, here we are, 8 days later. It's a sweep. And it was funny, the comment before the season ended of Daryl Sutter being like, whoever wild card team plays Colorado, it's going to be a waste of 8 days. And he predicted it. It was a sweep. It was not a waste, but yeah, it was, unfortunately. And Nashville didn't have their starting goaltender, their X factor, their number one X factor outside of Roman Josi, outscored 21-9. Colorado just took it to them. They're a better team. They just got overpowered. You know, Nashville, like right now, Dallas and Calgary, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but Dallas and Calgary, Dallas doesn't have a Brayden Holtby, but Jake Oettinger has been spectacular. But Dallas is also a tough team to play against, and Calgary, for as good as they are, I just, they're not the powerhouse that I think Colorado. Colorado, by the way, was also missing their goalie. Like Colorado, Darcy Kemper, dude had an eye injury. Didn't matter. Colorado still rolled with Pavel Francouz in net, who, by the way, was good. 28 saves on 31 shots. But they're just... Cale Makar is next level. Cale Makar in 4 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs has 10 points. Andrei Burakovsky, who was always a playoff performer, he had 3 points in 4 games. MacKinnon has just been a rock as well. He's got 6 points, 5 goals in 4 games. Makar is just, I don't know, man. You got to give that dude that. I think he wins the Norris, in my opinion. Maybe Yossi, but if Colorado goes far, Cale Makar is the betting favorite right now for the Conn Smythe. He's so good. But now they await, and they'll see what happens in the following days between St. Louis and Minnesota. But Colorado sweeping Nashville. They are on round 2. Nashville, you had great bounce back years from Duchesne, from Johansson. Hopefully you can re-sign Philip Forsberg and you'll get your goaltender back. That's your biggest X factor. Your goaltender, go spend a little bit and go diversify your forward group. Go spread some things out. You know, go spread some things out. Go get a couple more players that can really, you know, give you some depth up front scoring-wise. And Nashville's going to be fine. Nashville's got a goaltender. They're just, they're riding the coattails and they're just, you go from Pekarinen to UC Saros. Sorry, you went from Thomas Vokoun to Pekarinen to UC Saros. Stability in net is one of the most important things, and you guys have had it for a significant amount of time. So build on this, go into next season. You'll get your goaltender back. I like Nashville moving forward. One other series I want to break down really deep here is Pittsburgh, New York, and 2 goals in 24 seconds. And the New York Rangers are in a hole, 3-1, after this one from Jake Guentzel.
And that is the first career Stanley Cup playoff goal for Mike Matheson. 5 points in the last 3 games. Crosby tends to get on the attack. Guentzel, he scores! Bang, bang! It's Jake Guentzel, 3-1.
So that's their second goal in 24 seconds, I believe, in the second period. And the Penguins then just skate, trounce their way to a 7-2 victory against the, I think, favored New York Rangers, who coming in had made all these changes in the offseason. They'd gotten bigger, tougher. They got scoring. They got elite goaltending. Your 2 goal scorers from the Rangers yesterday were Alexi Lafreniere and Adam Fox. Nothing for Kreider. I think for Strom, Zibanejad had an assist. Panarin had an assist. Igor Shesterkin, in his last 2 contests, has given up 10 goals. Has a save percentage of like 7.67 and a goals against of, I'm not kidding, like 10.5. He had a 12 goals against on May 7th in the loss to Pittsburgh before he got pulled. He had a 9.23 goals against in the game against Pittsburgh where he got pulled. It's been, after playing, they lost the first game. He came back. He was spectacular in the triple overtime game where he made 79 saves. Then he came up with 39 and they ended up, the Rangers tied the series. And he had a 9.51 through the first 2 and a 2.15 goals against. Man, I'm telling you, goaltending factor, man. Huge factor. And how about Pittsburgh? Sidney Crosby, goal and 2 assists. He has 9 points in 4 games in these Stanley Cup playoffs. he has been, if it weren't for Cale Makar, he is the second best player in the playoffs right now. He's been that good, that impactful. It's really amazing. It really is amazing to watch Sidney Crosby at the ripe age of 34 continue to dominate when it matters. And that's why so many people make the argument of why Sidney Crosby, you would think that they're a better player than Connor McDavid. And everyone's like, well, look at the regulars, like look at the stats. McDavid's this. And like, listen, I am one of those guys where I'm like, yeah, Connor McDavid is next level. But Connor McDavid so far in four games, and it's not been bad, but he's got 6 points in four games. Crosby has 9. 2 goals. A catalyst. Crosby has made anyone he play with. He literally made Chris Kunitz an Olympian. At one point, his line mates were Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis. And now it's Brian Rust and Jake Guentzel. Guentzel, who scored 40-plus goals this year. And I'm not taking anything away from Jake Guentzel because I still think he's a really good player. But I think you take away probably 10 goals if Crosby's not there. I don't know. But man, Sid is just... the X factors in this series, Sidney Crosby is being Sidney Crosby, and Louis Domingue is out-dueling Igor Shesterkin. Also, Pittsburgh's playing better. Pittsburgh dominated every facet of the game on Monday night. So, from natural stat trick, there is the deserve-to-win-o meter. It's a meter that it's basically the game gets simulated 1,000 times, and over the course of it, how much one team deserves to win than the other. Pittsburgh, out of 100% ranking on the deserve-to-win-o meter, deserve to win 97.6% of the time. The Rangers, 2.4%. The Penguins outshot the Rangers 41-24, outhit them 54-49, won 60% of the faceoffs, and controlled nearly 80% of the expected goals. From natural stat trick and money pucks deserve to win o meter. Sorry, it's money pucks deserve to win o meter. And then Gerard Gallant came out afterwards and like played soft. We were soft all over the ice. Shesterkin is wholeheartedly getting the nod. Game 5, Gerard Gallant's like, we're not changing our goaltender. So there just wasn't a lot of commitment to playing defense and playing a team game. And Shesterkin, who, like, in fairness, he said he's been hung up to dry. Like, he hasn't been awful. He has been great. But a lot of what the team does affects the goaltender. And I bet money on the Rangers. I'm like, they're back. I'm like, they're going to take one from Pittsburgh. They're going to go back home. It's going to be tied at 2. Like, a lot of series I predicted. But, man, Pittsburgh. I predicted the Rangers to win this one. I think a lot of people did. And Pittsburgh so far has just been taken with the cleaners. They are now in a do-or-die situation the rest of the way if they want to keep their season alive. And Game 5 is on Wednesday in New York. All right, I want to go through some of the other series right now that are tied at 2 and give my quick analysis on those ones. And figured I'm not going to go through every single series and do deep dives, but I will cover everything else. I'll cover the remaining 5 series and kind of give a couple minutes here of point on them and tell you what I think and what I know moving forward. So I want to start with the Calgary Flames and Dallas Stars. So last night, Dallas unfortunately falls to Calgary by a score of 4-1. And the reason I say unfortunately, I'm not cheering for anybody in the series. Obviously, I just want to watch good hockey. I've actually been a little bit of a Flames fan. I was when I was a little bit younger with like Jerome McGinley, Mika Kiprusoff, and those guys. But I'm going to be honest here. This should be 3-1 Dallas. This series should be 3-1 Dallas. You are lucky if you're a Calgary fan that this thing is tied at 2. Johnny Gaudreau scored on a penalty shot yesterday to make it 2-0 Calgary in the game. On what was the weakest call of the entire playoffs so far. Johnny Gaudreau's on a partial breakaway, Defenseman, I believe it's John Klingberg, gets a stick up and catches the stick of Gaudreau as he goes to his backhand, and then Jake Ottinger comes across and gets his pad there. He tries to wait him out. They call a penalty shot on that play. I was watching the highlights this morning. And I don't have the volume on because I'm doing other things. And I watch, I'm like, oh, like Gaudreau had a chance there. And then it just clips to him on a penalty shot. I went, hold on. The refs called that? I've been watching primarily Toronto-Tampa series. And for all the criticisms that that series has had, it's everywhere. The referees changed the complete outlook of this game from that penalty shot call. Changed the whole game. It would still be 1-0. The momentum wouldn't be in Calgary's favor. Calgary then goes on to score on a 5-on-3 to make it 3-0. And so I thought that's the weakest call of the playoffs so far. Not even close. When did all of a sudden playoff hockey start getting called tighter than the regular season? I've never seen this in my life. I've seen penalties for tiny little taps on the gloves, for honestly stick lifts or going into the corner. I've seen penalty calls of players losing edges and falling because your stick's somewhere in the vicinity. It's getting called. The referees are really taking a lot of play out of the game. They are changing the momentum. And I wholeheartedly think if that penalty shot does not get called, it was nothing, let alone a penalty shot, I think Dallas wins that game. I really do. But series is tied at 2. Goes back to Calgary. If you're a Flames fan, you're pretty happy about it. If you're a Stars fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be absolutely pissed. Now, Calgary had 53 shots on net in the game. So maybe they still end up winning this thing. And Jake Oettinger was spectacular in this game. But maybe Dallas comes back a little bit. I don't know. That's my point. Again, I didn't watch the full game. It was too late at night. I have to get up at 3:45 in the morning. So no, I did not watch the whole game. But I saw that moment and I'm like, oh, so Calgary won. And they went on to win 4-1. So game 5, Wednesday as well. Calgary's back at home. They took home ice back. We'll see how that one plays out. Dallas is playing way harder than I thought. Like, I knew Dallas was a good defensive team, but they're giving Calgary all sorts of fits. Calgary had 54 shots, and, you know, this has been a really great series so far. Really has been. Watching the highlights and everything and seeing the back and forth, this is what you want. Playoff hockey. I love it. Next series is Boston-Carolina. And the moral of the story is here, never count Boston out. 2-0 Carolina going into Boston for game 3. I'm like, Carolina is going to just trounce the Bruins. And they were completely outclassed in game 1 and 2. And Boston storms back, including a massive game 4 win. Without the services, by the way, of Charlie McAvoy, who tested positive for COVID-19. This is the only series that I think comes down to home ice. Carolina's won both at home. Boston's won both at home. Their home ices, by the way, are incredibly difficult to play against. But every other series, I'm pretty sure a team has won in the other building. Colorado did it in Nashville, right? Calgary just did it to Dallas. The Kings just beat the Oilers. We'll talk about them in a bit. And the Blues of Wild have split their series as well, each team winning on the road. And the Panthers just won yesterday in Washington. Tampa, Toronto have traded wins back and forth in each other's buildings. It's the only series where the home team's won every game. Carolina's one of the loudest arenas, so I get that. Boston is also a nightmare to play in. But I think this comes down to home ice. But the moral of the story is never count out the Bruins. Brad Marchand, 5 points in game 4. Hate him as much as you want. What an X factor, man. What an X factor. Game 5 tonight in Carolina. Can't wait. Bruins. Brad Marchand led the team in points in the regular season, and he's got 9 points in 4 games this year, including 3 goals, 6 assists. Wild. Absolutely wild. That has also been a great series to watch as well. Oilers-Kings. Another series of wild outcomes so far. Oilers dominate a couple games. Kings take one game 1 from Edmonton and then shut them out in game 4. This series is whoever shows up and plays their game. The moment that either team bends and plays to the other's strengths and plays their game, they're done. Like, the moment that LA gets into a track meet with Edmonton, it's over. The moment Edmonton tries to grind out wins and play tight checking, tight defensive hockey, it's over. That's where the Kings want to be. They give up one or two really big chances, and then other than that, it's almost like a rope-a-dope, and they just score like a random goal it's a broken play out of nothing, and then the Kings come down and they pick their marks, they pick their spots. The moment one team concedes and plays the other's game, it's over for them. Edmonton has just got to continue to stretch the ice, play their game, and know that you've got the two best players in that series on your team. And then you can argue that it's Kopitar, or it's Deneau, or it's Trevor, whatever. But Edmonton has to have that mentality that we have the two best players in the series on our team. And that's how they have to play, knowing that that's the case. For the Kings, keep frustrating Edmonton. Keep defensively trying to frustrate them and stop them and whatnot. Because if Edmonton falls in your trap and starts playing that tight checking game, it's over. It's over for them. And same thing with the Kings. As soon as the Kings get into a track meet with Edmonton, that's game. That's how that series is going to finish. Once one team concedes and plays the other's game, it's over for them. This series, the Blues and Wild, I have absolutely no idea who's going to win this series. The most unpredictable series, in my opinion, by a long shot. Blues come in and absolutely dismantle Minnesota game one. Minnesota bounces back, wins their game two. Minnesota wins again. Then St. Louis wins again. It is the most unpredictable series that is still there. Like, here are the breakdowns of the game so far. Game one, St. Louis shuts out Minnesota 4-0. Game two, Minnesota comes back, trounces the Blues 6-2. Game three, Minnesota smashes St. Louis 5-1. Game four, Blues handle Minnesota 5-2. It's kind of been similar to Toronto-Tampa to an extent, where one team just outclasses the other. One team's got it, the other doesn't. But I have no idea who's going to win the series. Not a clue. Minnesota gets spectacular, stellar goaltending. Then can't stop a lot. Like, Fleury's game logs. 4 goals on 31 shots. 2 goals on 34. 1 goal on 30. 4 goals on 33. It's who has it. Also, St. Louis has started Jordan Binnington their last game as well. And it's just been, maybe they ride with Binnington again. Binnington played well in that one start too. But I have no idea who's going to win the series. Not a clue. All right, and then final series here, Washington, Florida. Washington should be up 3-1 right now. They are giving Florida a run for their money. But 3 minutes left in the game, Florida pulls the goaltender. Washington ices it from their end. Misses the net by maybe 3 inches. Instead of doing the safe, that's why kids don't always just shoot for the net. Because it might come back and cost you. Florida then, with a 6-on-5 advantage, ties the game. I believe Carter Verhaeghe scores. And then they go on to win 3-2 in overtime and take the series back. After a big comeback, Carter Verhaeghe with 2 in the game, by the way. No, sorry, Sam Reinhart scored the game-tying goal, and then Carter Verhaeghe with 2. This is where, also, Washington really could have stole this game. They were up 2-1. They did eventually lose, but they were up 2-1, despite the fact that shots on goal at the end of the game were 32-16 for Florida. And Washington almost won it. That's a big factor in this. If you can steal a game in which, yes, you are outplayed, man, it takes so much out of a team who dominates from start to finish, loses. You go back in the locker room and go, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And there you have it. Now the series is tied up at 2. Going back to Florida, that was a big momentum shift that could have been a lot trickier going into game five in Florida. Florida down 3-1 instead. Series tied at 2. It's, again, perspective. Florida feels way better returning home. Split the series 2-2 with Washington. They feel better, I think, right now than Toronto does going back to Toronto, splitting that series 2-2. Why? Perspective. Florida finds a way to come back, win game four after being down 2-1 with just 3 minutes left. Toronto gets trounced game four with an opportunity to take a 3-1 series lead. Perspective is everything, man. Perspective is everything. All right, final note here before we head on out. A couple news and notes. Big one in New York. The New York Islanders have said that Barry Trotz is no longer the head coach as the club dismissed him Monday after four seasons. Trotz guided the Islanders to back-to-back semifinal round appearances before they failed to qualify in the playoffs this past year. New York has made the playoffs in his first 3 years at the helm and then unfortunately losing both times to the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's weird because the record with Barry Trotz is 152, 102, and 34. So that's nearly a 600 winning percentage with the Islanders. But the one season they don't make it, fired. So interesting move by New York. I have no idea who is a better coach. I've called him, you know, at times the best coach in the league. Maybe not this year, but I've always referred to him as one of the best coaches in the league, considering the roster he had and despite the fact that he took them to two really deep playoff runs with the roster that he was given. His best player is Matthew Barzal, who had like, what, 50, 60 points? Their teams with multiple guys with 100. Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto almost had two of them. Like, Barry Trotz did wonders with that team. So, interesting decision. We'll see who comes out afterwards. And another member who's no longer with an organization, Pierre Maguire, no longer the part of the Ottawa Senators front office. The club confirmed on Monday as well. He was hired last July on a 3-year deal to be their senior VP of hockey development. Primarily, he was focused on scouting the club's AHL affiliate in Belleville, but 10 months was all it lasted. Pierre Maguire, obviously a big member of the media crew, was working for NBC, TSN for a bit, and we will see what the future holds for him. But until then, that is it for me today. Thank you very much. As always, follow along on ST Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you want to follow. Give a like, give a submission. I believe you can give a review on Apple Podcasts, so I would love that. Go enjoy playoff hockey. Don't let it bring you down so much. Don't let it be the be-all, end-all of your life. If your team doesn't do very well, it's okay. Take a breath. Go for a walk outside. It's not the end of the world. Obviously, we cheer for our teams. I am as diehard a fan as you can imagine, but I have come to learn that there's a lot going on in my life right now and more important things to be stressed about than how your team finishes when you ultimately don't have any control. But nevertheless, go root for your team. Go sport your jerseys. Go cheer for them. Hopefully it's the outcome that you look for. And as we move ahead to next week, there will be a lot more Series 1 matchups in the books, and we will look ahead to the Series 2 matchups. Until then, enjoy. That's a wrap.